RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Interstate Batteries offers a wide variety of batteries for your everyday needs. Stop into one of their thousands of retail locations and talk with a battery specialist about batteries for your truck, trail cameras, and even those weird batteries for your rangefinder. Interstate Batteries even offers cell phone repair in certain locations. For more information, visit interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Here we go again, ladies and gentlemen. Another episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast coming your way. It is, man, what day is it? It is September 15th. That means we're halfway through September. I don't even know where August and the first 15 days of September went. It's just been a blur. My life has been a blur the last couple months. And I'm really hoping it settles down here pretty soon because I want to savor every moment of this upcoming hunting season. And, you know, I talked to my grandma, I talked to my parents, and the only thing they say is that it just keeps getting faster and more chaotic. And that's a little bit sad, if you ask me. Either way, I am starting the process. I have all of my hunting gear kind of laid out in this one room in my little office slash gear room that I have here. I got all my saddle stuff pulled out, set to the side, making sure that everything's put together. I just got another box from Tethered today that I got to dig through. I got some of their packs and some of their some more of their platforms in hopes that I'm going to be ultra mobile this year. But one thing that I wanted, and so I got another platform, was that if there is a place that is really, really good on some of the properties that I hunt, I want to be able to leave a setup there. And so the only thing I really have to do is climb up, attach, hang on, and then we're good to go. And so that's what I'm looking for. That's what I wanted some backup, basically some backup equipment just in case an opportunity like that presented itself. So today we're going to be talking with Justin Czar, and we're going to be talking about boots, bows, arrows. We're going to be talking about, I don't even remember what we all talked about in this episode, to be honest with you. We talk about any new gear that we're picking up, any old gear that we kind of like. It's a good old-fashioned BS session from our good buddy Justin Czar. And before we get into today's episode, though, I just want to say, if you are a fan of the Hunting Gear Podcast, do me a huge favor. Head on over to iTunes or wherever you download your podcast and leave me a 5-star review. And what that does is it just lets everybody else know how badass this podcast is, and I'd really appreciate it. So we got to do a commercial real quick, and that is Code Blue. Now, Code Blue Sense is a new partner here on the Hunting Gear Podcast, and they offer real deer urine. And one of the cool things I like about this scent company is they offer real deer urine, and it's one deer per bottle or one deer per little bag. So it's like they get the urine, and it's only one deer. It's not like a blend. And that's pretty sweet, man. That if you're into real deer urine, I feel like having one scent factor, I don't even know if I'm saying this right, but one scent identifier. So a deer goes up and goes, okay, that smells like one deer. I can only think that would be more beneficial than a blend, right? On top of that, they offer a ton of synthetic type scents. They offer the scent-free laundry detergent, the scent-free deodorant, you know, the scent-free sprays. And the thing that I've been messing around with the most this year has been their Rope-A-Dope mock scrape system. And I'm really hoping that it pays off here in the next couple, you know, the next couple weeks when scraping activity really starts to pick up. I'm hoping that, you know, most of the deer are hardhorn now. Like, I got one little spike running around and he's still in velvet, but most of the other deer are all hardhorn right now. Scraping activity is going to start picking up, and I hope they start to use the scrape system the mock scrape kit that I've been using, or that I've put out. I think I put out 5 over 2 properties, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how that all plays out. So I'm looking forward to that. If you are looking for any type of scent elimination products, or you want to start messing around with deer scents, whether that's urine or mock scrapes, they have the orbital, you know, the orbital gland as well, and they have a whole bunch of other stuff there. Go check out codebluescents.com. And if you do want to buy something, I have a discount code. It is NFC20 for 20% off. So go take advantage of that. That's it. Huge shout out to Justin for taking time out of his day to hop on. Huge shout out to Code Blue for partnering with this podcast. Huge shout out to all of you for taking time out of your day to download and listen to this episode, man. Really appreciate it. Good vibes in and good vibes out. And let's get into today's episode with Justin Czar. 3, 2, 1. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hunting Gear Podcast. Today's guest, Justin Czar. Justin, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Dan. That was a very dramatic introduction.
I know.
I like it.
I was channeling my inner monster truck radio DJ wrestling announcer voice.
That's perfect for me.
Yep. Yep.
Because when people think monster trucks and wrestling, they think
Justin Czar. You do kind of have like, a wrestling type name, Justin Czar. Like I can see that being Justin the Czar, you know, and then yeah, you come out, sure. you just dominate countries.
I would be like the Iron Sheik.
Yes.
In some way, shape, or form. I'm not sure how.
If there was an American version of the Iron Sheik, that would be you.
That's what they've been calling me, Dan, my whole life. Just can't escape it.
Hey, I do have a question for you. Like, what country is your bloodline from?
You know, that's a great question. My actual like name, because on my grandpa's side of things, my grandpa was always very like weird about talking about it. I'm not sure he totally knew entirely. So obviously there's a lot of speculation of like Russian lineage there. My sister did like a 23andMe or something. I'll have to find it and figure out what it was. But honestly, dude, nobody really knows. They think it was shortened from something at some point. Probably Eastern European. Like I have a lot of German in me, but that was on my grandma's side of things because they were all German immigrants, the Bonestad side. But the Czar side, it's like nobody really knows for sure. It's a big mystery.
Hey, there's something nice about a little mystery, you know. Maybe someday, like have you ever heard those stories about, hey, you know, I'm interested in my, you know, my bloodline and my past and who my great grandparents were and who their great grandparents were, so on and so forth. And then you come to find out you're like your family was known for stealing, going into villages and stealing children and selling them to other rich countries.
Just my luck.
Yeah. Well, this
I'm waiting
is...
for like the police to come knocking on my door because it's like, yeah, one of your relatives did a DNA test and we were able to trace it back to you and find some terrible thing you did when you were a teenager. Like, no.
Oh, DNA never lies, my friend. DNA never lies. Okay. On a scale of 1 to 10, you've already hunted this year, right?
I have.
Kentucky.
I have hunted.
Okay. And we're going to talk about that on the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast pretty soon. But I want to know how many – so you've hunted Kentucky already. How many other states do you plan on hunting this year?
Just Illinois. I don't think I'm going anywhere else. I may make a trip back to Kentucky. We'll see how things go. But other than that, I'm just I'm in waiting mode for Illinois to open and – however many 18 days or whatever we got left in Illinois, and then it's go time.
So no trips to see your best bud DeCrew this year.
I had one planned, but then all the animals died out of my own. They had a pretty massive winter kill out there, and it's pretty rough in terms of whitetail, mule deer, antelope got hit really hard. Tag allocations got way, way, way cut back. He ended up cutting like 60% of their hunters for this year that were booked to go hunting. So yeah, it was pretty rough for him. So we kind of just electively bowed out. Mm-hmm. I was like, dude, I don't need to come out there and shoot another antelope. Like if the population's hurting, I was like, you know, the few that are remaining, like he's got other clients that he could take. And then what ended up happening when they cut tag allocation was in the area where he's at, usually you don't need points to draw an antelope tag. And even though I had a point, the guys I was going with did not have points. So they weren't going to draw a tag anyways. There's no way you were going to draw without points this year. So we just ended up saying, screw it. So we pulled the plug on Wyoming, which ultimately is why I decided to go to Kentucky. I was like, well, I want to do something early season. So I had a couple guys on our team that were already going to Kentucky. And I just kind of jumped in with them and tagged along on that ride.
Gotcha. Well, that's cool, man. I tell you what, I only have one out of state trip planned this year. I want to put more on my plate, but you know how it is between kids and sports and activities and kind of not feeling like a deadbeat dad when you're gone for like 8 days in a row. You know what I mean? So
Yeah.
Yeah, buddy.
I just did that. And believe me, my wife was not happy. There's three kids. They're all in various sporting activities, and she's having to rely on friends and other relatives and people to get them where they need to be when they need to be there. So
yeah,
my out of town trips are very limited, I will say.
Yeah. Now I will say this. I feel like I've done a really good job this year at me not doing anything, like not going, doing anything in the summer, anything in the winter. I went to the ATA show. That was it. And yep. Other than that, I haven't been on any other trips. And so I feel like there's a little bit of, I deserve this, you know, this fall.
That's how I feel too.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I
so
feel like I've built up some goodwill.
Right. And so my wife is like, hey, October 20th, what are we doing? I'm just like, well, you know, October 20th is what I usually do every single year. Why? What, you know, what do you want to do? Well, I want to do this. I'm like, okay, whatever. And then it was like, what about October 16th or something, the weekend before that? And I'm just like, hold on, like pump the brakes. We know what's about to happen, right? We're going to get into an argument, and this argument is about, it's going to be about me hunting. Right. So, you know, cause she's like, one of my favorite times of year is the fall. I don't blame her. Right. I like to go to tailgate.
My favorite time too.
Yeah. My favorite time too. And so I'm just like, hey, I wish you would like sleeping in tents and in the back of my truck and, you know, sitting in freezing cold weather and hot weather and rain like I do. Because if you did, then we could do a ton of fun stuff. So
my wife does this thing where it's like the same thing. She wants to just ask me something, yeah. But she doesn't just, like, she kind of beats around the bush a little mm-hmm. bit. Like, hey, what, like the same thing. Like, hey, what are you doing on this weekend? And I'm like, well, instead of you asking me what I'm doing and then me telling you and then you respond and then there's all mm-hmm. this, like, why don't you just come out and say, like, hey, on this weekend, I want to go with my girlfriends on a trip to wherever mm-hmm. for the weekend. Just, like, just start there.
Yep.
Why do we have to do this little song and dance that just leads into us getting into an argument? Just, if you want to do something, that's fine. Just tell me, come out and say it. We'll figure out a plan. I'll stay home with the kids for a weekend. Like, it's not the end of the world, you know, but it always seems to start that way.
Yeah.
Hey, what are you doing on like October 28th?
Well, you know like, what I'm doing.
You know what I'm doing.
You know what I'm doing, right? Like, why the dumbass question? I can't say that though. Yeah. Can't say that.
Yeah.
All right. Hard pivot. All right. Yep. We don't have to talk too crazy long on this episode about this stuff, but this is the Hunting Gear Podcast. And so I just want to BS a little bit about some of the gear that you're using. Maybe you tested out in previous years, liked, disliked, you know, continued sure. with something, discontinued something. So I think we'll start it off with, are there any new products that you're bringing into the tree stand or into the tree with you this year that you haven't used in previous years?
Probably just trying a new pack this year is probably really the only thing I can think of that I'm changing in like a larger way. You know, we got hooked up with Mystery Ranch this year, so we're using their packs. I was using an Eberle stock X2 pack last year, switched over to, I have a couple different Mystery Ranch packs that I'm kind of like trying out to figure out which one I liked the best.
Yeah.
That's going to work for my hunting style. So I brought two different packs with me to Kentucky. They came out with two new treehouse packs. They're small. One's like a fanny pack. It's like a treehouse 9, I want to say.
Yep.
And then a 6 and then a 16, which is more of a day pack size. And the 16 was by far like my preferred one for what I was doing with saddle hunting and packing in a platform and sticks and everything. The 16 worked awesome. I was very, very impressed with that little pack. So I'll probably be using that one a lot. I've also got a Treehouse 20 and a 38, both the bigger ones. Mm-hmm. The 38 is pretty big. I'm not sure I'm going to be taking that one too far. The 20 might be the one that I graduate into once things get a little bit cooler. Maybe I'm doing all day sits and I need to pack some extra food or drinks or a heavier coat or something like that. I'm not sure the 16 is going to cut it. So the 20 will probably be like what I graduate into once things get colder. But other than that, I think everything else, man, is pretty much same stuff I used last year and probably for the last couple of years, to be honest with you. Obviously, you know, new bow this year as usual, but I mean, yeah, that's yeah. that.
I tell you what, I had the opportunity at the ATA show this year to try on all the packs from Mystery Ranch. And with all due respect, I believe I like their previous treehouse model better than their current treehouse models. I love the fact that they're trying to address the noise issue with that fleece type covering on it. But I don't know how that's going to react in the environment that I hunt with some of the cockabirds, some of the beggar's lice. I know it's going to be durable, but I don't know, like, just for that fact alone, I think it's just going to pick up so much stuff, even though I talked with one of their engineers and the fabric that they use or the fibers that they use on that are straight. So yep. It should be easier to remove.
To get them off, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I didn't run into any beggar's lice or anything yet with it, because obviously that's my concern too.
Yeah.
Like, I come out of the woods where I hunt locally here, and dude, I'm just covered in it, head to toe, my pants. I will say, like, shout out to the burr paw. Do you have a burr paw, Dan?
Dude, I don't, but my buddy Byron Horton, Byron Horton has one. And he's like, dude, you got to get a burr paw. So I need to just go bite the duck.
Thing ever.
Yeah.
Dude, just go on Amazon. I got them. Amazon burr paw done.
Yep.
The thing's fantastic. I use the shit out of that burr paw.
Yeah.
What a great little device. But yeah, we'll see how the material holds up. Like, overall pack quality, fit, like pocket layout and everything. Like, I love it. I wish on the 20, on the Treehouse 20, it had a waist belt on it with pockets. You know, I like that, a little bit extra storage. It's probably the only thing that it doesn't have that I wish it had. One thing that those packs all have that I didn't really think I would use or care about is the strap that actually holds it onto the tree. So instead of hanging it from like a hook, it comes with a strap and it's got two clips on it, where you actually put the strap around the tree and cinch the pack down so it doesn't really move. Dude, that thing is badass. I'm not going to lie. I love that thing.
Yeah.
And I did not think I was even going to use it. I'm like, I'm going to take this stupid-ass thing off and not use it. And then I was like, wow, this thing actually really did come in handy.
Is it big enough for, I mean, big trees?
Yeah, it's pretty damn big. Yeah. I mean, I was saddle hunting, so, I mean, I'm trying to avoid big trees when you're in a saddle. So, I mean, I didn't have anything huge, but I mean, I hunted out of some sort of gum tree that was like at the base of it, like I couldn't get my hands around it. And, you know, I got up to hunting height and I had plenty of strap, you know, to get around that tree, and it was pretty decently sized. So, yeah, I think it'll be fine.
What's that do then when you're not using it? Does all of that strap then stuff back in behind the back wall?
Yeah, you can. It's like removable, so you could just, you know, take it and shove it in a pocket when you're not using it.
Yeah.
You know, it's got little clips on it. So what I did was on the fanny pack, I actually used that strap around the front of the pack to secure my saddle platform when I was walking in. And then once I got to the tree and got hunting, then I ran it around the back and just cinched it down, and it worked pretty well.
Gotcha. I wonder if they did that, put that feature in there, because there are places, and I'm not sure if Iowa is one of them, but I know that there's certain states out there that you're not allowed to cut shooting lanes or drill into the trees in any way, shape, or form.
Sure. I mean, I think that's most public that I've ever been on has been like nothing that, you know, pierces the bark. You can't screw anything into a tree. You're not supposed to cut stuff down. I've been to some places where it's like you can't cut or trim anything maybe that's bigger than like your thumb, something along those lines.
Yeah.
I've been to a few of those places, but let's talk reality, dude.
Yeah.
You walk around public land and there's stuff trimmed all over the place.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I've talked to a bunch of CEOs and they've all said like they're not gonna write somebody a ticket for, you know, cutting a few little, you know, limbs, you know, here and there.
Yeah.
What they don't want people doing is going and just mowing down lanes, you know, giant shooting lanes.
Yeah.
But that is, for sure, that's one of the hardest parts about hunting public is you find a spot you want to hunt, and then finding one, a tree that's good enough to get in, and two, that allows you to shoot where you need to be able to shoot.
Yeah.
Like, that is a pain in the ass. There's a very finite number of trees in those places. So what I've found over the years hunting public is, like, you tend to end up in trees that you can tell other people have hunted before.
Oh yeah.
Right. They've got climbing stick marks in them, or they've got a limb that you could see somebody trim down, or, or something like that. Like, everybody kind of gravitates to those same spots because they are so limited, which I think is partially why, like, ground hunting on public has become a much bigger thing. I see a lot of guys walking around in ghillie suits with ground stools nowadays, you know, hunting from the ground, because the tree thing is awesome. But man, if you got the right spot and you can't find a tree, like, what the hell are you supposed to do?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I wonder if even, I think about things like this all the time. Like, you want to talk about really being minimalistic in your approach. So everybody goes, okay, I want a ladder stand, but I want to be mobile. Now I got to get a hang on and some sticks or some kind of climbing method. All right. Now now I only want to use two sticks and aiders and a saddle. Okay. Well, if you want to be, honestly, you want to be the most minimalistic hunter that there possibly is, you don't have any of that, and you just hunt from the ground in some kind of natural ground line. I think it's possible.
100%. Yeah. I've killed deer off the ground. I mean, the first, I don't know how many years I started hunting, that's all I did was hunt from the ground.
Yeah.
I started hunting from tree stands, like, pretty consistently, maybe like my late teens, but like all through high school, dude. I'd get off school at night, drive my crappy little car to where I was going to hunt. I'd get out, throw my clothes on with my HS scent wafers in my bag, and I'd take my bow and just go wander around the woods and pop a squat next to a tree. And you know, I did shoot deer and had a lot of great encounters and stuff. So, I mean, ground hunting was really all I knew.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we really started hunting out of tree stands. And it was great because you could see more. You felt like you didn't get busted as much. You know, when you have the opportunity on private land to hang in advance and trim everything out and whatnot, like, it is nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's something about, like, the ultimate in mobility is certainly just being on the ground, right?
I mean,
you're not tied to anything.
Yeah. All right. So no real, other than your bow, no real big changes from clothing or boots or bow accessories or anything like that?
Trying to think. I mean, I dabble with different arrows and different broadheads pretty much every year. I'm shooting FMJs this year, which I did shoot kind of the tail end of last year. I've been shooting Axis the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Decided to give the FMJs a try. I shot one deer with them last year. They did great. So I'm gonna keep rolling with those for a while. Broadhead wise, man, I'm like, I'm always torn. I tend to carry like two, maybe three different broadheads in my quiver, to be completely honest with you.
Yeah.
When I go out hunting, and then from hunt to hunt, I'll just knock a different arrow each time. So right now I think I have two different broadheads in my quiver. I love NAP Spitfires. The Spitfire Triple X is probably like my number one whitetail broadhead. I've just killed a ton of stuff with them. So I think I have a bunch of those in there. And then I have the NAP Endgame, which is like a fixed blade. Oops, my stupid light went off here. Which is the fixed blade, like, titanium broadhead.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I shot my deer with last year, just a doe. But I mean, I have that in my quiver as well. So from hunt to hunt, they both fly the same. Bows tuned awesome. You know, they both shoot, you know, same impact point and everything. So from hunt to hunt, I just grab a different one depending on how I'm feeling that day.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's what's in my quiver. You know, boot-wise, I did try out a new set of boots, those new lacrosse. I think they're called the Ursa, maybe. I want to say it's more of like a Western hiking boot that they came out with. They're pretty stiff. I broke them in here, walked probably 9-10 miles in them during the summer, just on some rucks that I did to get them broken in. I like them. They're nice.
Yeah.
They're comfortable for saddle hunting. I like a boot that's got like a stiffer sole on it because you're spending so much time on the edge of your platform.
Yeah.
So those work pretty well for me. I'll probably keep hunting with those during the early season, until things start getting colder, and then I'll make the switch to something else.
Yeah.
But, those I guess were new for me this year. So, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think. I'm sure there's some other new crap that I've got. The one thing that here's what I will say. the one piece of gear that I, the more I use it, the more I love it, are going to be my tethered one climbing sticks.
Okay.
Those tethered one sticks, dude, I know they're expensive. They are pricey as hell. But dude, and I've used a lot of climbing sticks in my life. Dude, those are the most badass climbing sticks I've ever used. Yeah. Like, without question. Not yeah. only are they lightweight, they're freaking silent. The attachment method, dude, they're rock freaking solid. Those things bite into a tree like no other climbing stick I've ever used.
Yeah.
Like, every single time I'm done using them, I undo the rope, and that thing is literally stuck on the tree. Like, it yeah. never falls off, ever. Yeah. Like, again, the more I use them, the more I love them. I carry four of the tethered one sticks with I carry three one-step aiders with me. Depending on the tree, sometimes I use one, sometimes two, sometimes all three. It really depends. Sometimes I don't use any at all, depending yeah. on the tree that I'm climbing. I feel like when I'm saddle hunting, I don't have to get super, super high. So I'm not, like, ultra concerned about being, you know, 20, 25 feet in the air. You know, I feel like 12, 14, 16 feet is plenty.
Yeah.
When I'm in the saddle, for whatever reason, I don't know why I feel that way, but I just do. So, but yeah, that's like the one piece of climbing equipment that I've used that's just been like, damn, these things are freaking nice.
Yeah. Yeah. You've shot Matthews bows now for several years, right?
Oh gosh. Probably 12 years. 12 years. Something like that.
Okay. Yeah. You know, obviously, if you went back 12 years and you compared the bow you're shooting now to that first Matthews bow that you've shot, sure. you'd probably notice some big differences. Because yeah. you're the kind of person who switches to a new bow every year, do you notice any differences, or like from year to year, you know what I mean? Where you're less like, oh shit, this bow is this much better. Like, I can put a graph, you know, I can say on a graph, it's this much better than the previous year's model.
Sure. I would say in some regard, yes and no. It's weird because it's like from year to year, I feel like there's some bows, for whatever reason, even though you can go like to the previous year's model and then you go to this year's model and it's like on paper, it doesn't feel like a whole lot changed, because I know that's what a lot of people kind of bitch about. Oh man, it's like the same bow. Mm-hmm. You just change this one thing. But for whatever reason, whatever configuration that they did to it, like, it just shoots awesome. Right. And that's not every bow in every year, where like every third or fourth year I get one where I'm like, dude, this thing is like the cat's ass. Like, yeah. I felt like that with my VXR. Like, my VXR, dude, that bow, I just shot lights out. I loved it, you know. And then I think we ran after that, I'm trying to think where it went, V3X, maybe phase four, something like that, if I'm recalling the yeah. correct order. So we're in the phase fours now. And I feel that way about really the last two bows. The V3, I liked. V3X, I loved. The phase four, I loved. Like, and I'm shooting I have both a 33 and a 29.
Yeah.
I took the 29 to Kentucky with me. When I'm doing the run and gun saddle stuff, I do like the more compact bow, for sure. I just like, it's a little bit less weight. It's a little bit easier to maneuver around, to carry in, to hang up in the tree and not have it banging into my camera gear or whatever, just because right. it's a little bit shorter. So I do love that 29 inch bow. Yeah. The one thing I am shooting on that bow that's new for me this year is I did put one of those UV ultra view grips on it, the Be Real grip, the crispy
oh, yeah. yep.
grip on it. Yep. Dude, that thing's freaking sweet. That's bad. I wish they made one that didn't have a Be Real logo on it, so I didn't have to feel like a fanboy. But Chris is a cool dude, and it's a great grip. I love that thing.
Yeah.
I'll probably buy another one to put on my 33 as well.
That's awesome. Yeah, man, I'll tell you this. Here's one thing that I used to be like, dude, give me a 30 inch. Give me 30 inches, or, you know, maybe even 29. I think the shortest I ever shot was a 28 inch axle to axle.
Yep.
But I find my comfort zone. What's your draw length?
29.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm 30, and I've found that when I'm shooting that 32, 33, 34 yeah. inch axle to axle, I just feel way more comfortable at full draw. And sure. honestly, I feel like my days of anything less than 32 are probably over.
I think for the guys that are 30-inch draw and up, I could 100% see that. Yeah. I mean, those short bows, string angle gets tough, you know, when you're at that longer draw length. And I think the bows perform better. For me, at that, anybody that's like a 29 and under, it's one of those things where, you know, everybody talks about the same crap. We're like a bunch of parrots, you know, the bow comes out and we're like, oh my God, it's 29 inches. It's not going to be as forgiving, you know, the reality. And it's like, everybody says the same thing. The string angle is not as forgiving, blah, 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 blah. It's like, the reality is, for most of us, we're not world-class archers where you would be able to truly tell the difference.
Yeah.
But, you know, for a lot of us, it does come down to comfort and how it fits your face and that string angle when you come to full draw. For me, I tend to shoot those shorter bows pretty dang well.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing, too, is a lot of the stuff that we talk about comes from, like, the older days of bow technology. You know, now when you are looking at newer, more modern bows, you know, you look at a 29-inch axle-to-axle bow, well, dude, there's a couple things going on. Number one, like, the cams are enormous.
Huge, yes.
So when you look at where the string comes off a cam, it's, hell, it could be 2 inches above the actual axle itself. So now, you know, yes, it's 29 between the axles, but it may be 33 between where the actual string is coming off the cam. Yeah. Plus, those, you know, modern bows, dude, the limbs don't flex all that much.
No.
When you draw them back. Those old, you know, back in the day bows, you had a limb that was like this, and it flexed a lot when you drew that sucker back.
Yeah.
Now it's, dude, it's barely moving at all. So the idea of the shorter axle to axle, like, not being maybe as stable as the longer axle to axle, like, it just, especially for those of us that are shooting maybe 40 yards, 30 yards and in, mm-hmm. you know, in the woods at whitetails, I just don't think it makes as big of a difference.
Right.
As people want to make it out to be in their minds, because it gives them something to talk about.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think in practical use out in the field, it's not as big of an issue.
Right. Right. Yeah. I don't know. I'm in a groove right now with my current bow. I'm shooting a Bowtech Solution. This is the third year I've been shooting it. And so I had a decision to make at the beginning of the year. Do I, A, go look for a new bow, or B, just put a new string on it? So I thought about it for about a month, and I was like, it's too late now. just put a new, put a new string on it. And so I'm pretty happy that I did that. I think Every time I get a brand new bow and I gotta, you know, put, you know, tune it and get it all set up, there's something, I don't know, that makes me warm and fuzzy going back to a previous year's model, knowing for the most part, if I don't have to change the string, it's already set up. All I gotta do is fine tune it to get it back to, you know, not fine tune it and myself to get back to the accuracy I was the previous year.
It's like putting on a pair of boots that's already broken in.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I get it. It is a double-edged sword, right? Because we get new bows pretty much every year in, like, October.
Yeah.
So most likely in the next 30 days, I'll have a new bow in my hands that I'll be tuning and setting up and then hopefully hunting with by, you know, late October.
Yeah.
And as awesome as that is, it also is like, this is not when I want to be doing this.
Yeah.
I want to be doing this during the summer, so I have months to shoot it and get comfortable with it. You know, fortunately, today's bows, dude, they're so good, and they're, for the most part, so freaking easy to tune and get set up and shooting well. You know, if you kind of know what you're doing, like, it's not as big of a deal, but sometimes, like I was saying, like, you get a bow, like, let's say the one you're shooting right now, that you just really like.
Yeah, I like it.
You like it. You're comfortable with it. You're confident in it. You don't necessarily need that new one. I mean, you always want a new one, but you don't need a new one.
Yeah.
My day kicks off with a refreshing Celsius energy drink, then straight to the gym. Pre-K pickup, back home to meal prep. Time for my fire station shift. One more Celsius, gotta keep the lights on. When the 3-alarm hits, I'm ready. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
know? So there is something to be said sometimes for just the old faithful, right? Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it's more about us doing our job than it is the bow doing its job, right. You know?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. But I think this is probably going to be my last year with it, just because, I don't know, 4 years or 3 years now with the same bow, I start to get jittery, and I got to keep up with the Justin Czars of the world and buy a new bow.
Like you're married to it.
Yeah, exactly. I can't be married to my bow. I already got one marriage. So, going back to boots, just a minute. Did you try on a lot of other boots before you got the pair that you're using?
I tried on a set of Crispies that I didn't mind.
Yep.
At all. And I tried on, oh gosh, I cannot remember the name of these other boots. I actually ended up getting a pair of them for later season because they're a little bit bigger and they're insulated. It starts with a Z. They're an Italian company. Gosh dang it, I cannot remember the name.
Zamberlin?
Yeah. Zamberlin. Is that what they are?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like those a lot. I mean, obviously I haven't hunted in them yet. And when I got them this summer, it was like 100 degrees out. So I put them on and I was like, oh my God, this is too hot. I got to take them off. So I'm looking forward to those. You know, I've used the last few years, I've been using Danners, and I've been really happy with those, to be completely honest with you. You know, and a lot of times what happens with me is one of those guys is like, I get the new stuff. I like it. I try it for a little while, but then I end up going back to my old stuff.
Yeah.
You know, for whatever reason, like if it ain't broke, don't fix it type of thing.
Yeah. I had a pair of Crispy Thors. The first pair that I ever had, like 6 years ago or whenever they first came out, wore them for a couple years. And then just last week bought another pair of boots after my second go around with Crispy Thors. So I bought Crispy Thors, wore them for a handful of years, did Crispy Thors again and wore those for a handful of years. And then I ended up going to Scheels, and dude, the guy at the store probably hated me because I tried on like seven or eight different kinds of boots, man. I was like, I tried on Kennetrex, Irish setters, Danners. What's Danner's sister company called?
So Danner and Lacrosse.
Lacrosse. Yeah. I don't think I tried on any Lacrosses, but Danners, Irish setters, Kennetrex, and then of course Crispies too. And like five pairs of each brand. And I ended up going back to Crispies, man. There's something I really like about their boots, and I didn't go with the Crispy Thors this time. I went with the, Colorados. And so, I don't know, uninsulated Colorados. And so I'm going to give those a try. Actually, as soon as we get done recording today, I'm going to go on a weighted pack hike, and I'm going to break those in.
So how much weight you pack in there, Dan?
I'm going to put a 45. I got that Atlas trainer. Seen that?
You do have one of those. Yeah, dude. Those things are pricey, though.
Yeah.
Gosh, I've been looking at getting one.
Yeah, get it. I mean, it is.
You think so?
Dude, it's awesome.
Dude, I took my Eberle stock since I'm not hunting with it anymore. And actually, I got it right here. I throw, I throw this 35-pound kettlebell in there. And then the last time I went, I had like a 10-pound sack of deer minerals that somebody gave me.
Yep.
But I can't use them in Illinois, right? We can't put minerals out.
Yep.
So I just put it in my pack with this thing to get me to 45 pounds. And then I hike around with that.
Yeah. I used to do the same thing. But when I was, I was doing it with my Western pack. I got a Mystery Ranch Metcalf. That's my Western. So I would throw.
I just ordered one of those yesterday for DeCrew, actually.
Oh, nice.
I ordered him one to send to his house.
Nice. He'll love it. And I would put kettlebells and dumbbells in the pack, but it's just all sinks straight down.
Right.
And, you know, I could go through the routine of maybe putting a whole bunch of towels in there and some different weight structures so it better represents. The reason I like this Atlas trainer is because you put a big 45-pound plate on the back of it, lock it in, and it's evenly distributed across your back. It's not like pulling down on
your shoulder. But those Atlas trainers are like, what, $300 or something?
Yep. Yep.
Aren't they?
I've had mine for like
pricey.
Five.
I looked at them.
I've had mine for like 5 years now. They're legit, man. Yeah. Spend the money, get one. I know how much. Yeah, I know how much money you make, man. You can definitely afford it.
Weighted rucking has become one of my favorite like outdoor workouts for sure. Yeah. When I did 75 hard this fall, that was like my go-to for like my outdoor workout, or I should say the spring. And I just kind of fell in love with it, dude. It's the best. And I will tell you, it made the absolute world of difference just for me in this Kentucky trip that I just went on. Like, I felt like I was, dude, I was walking miles with everything I had strapped on me. Like, wasn't out of breath. Didn't have to stop halfway up a hill, you know, to go. I just went, you know, and my legs never got sore or tired. I felt like when you're in a saddle, there is a lot of time spent on your feet and a lot of like leg, you know, I know guys say like, oh, I got to get in saddle shape. You know, it takes me a few sits to get in saddle shape. My legs are real sore after the first few times. Like, I never went through any of that just because I was trying to keep up on that fitness, and weighted rucking has been a big, big part of that. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, man.
That's when I listen to your podcast, Dan, when I'm on my weighted rocks.
On your rocks. Awesome. I
appreciate
dude, that's
that. What I do. I listen to, I throw on podcasts and I go walk, you know, that's what I do.
I'm going to be doing that here shortly. And so, well, Justin, man, any other products you want to touch base on before we shut her down here today?
Products that I want to talk about, some products that I love that I own. Let me just give some shout outs, dude. My deer cart, when I actually do kill a deer.
Oh, yeah. What brand?
I have one of those. Dude, I have that Hawk crawler, which is like the four tire where the tires like rotate. Mm-hmm. Dude, that's the greatest thing of all time. I don't know why in the hell I was so stupid for so many years and dragging these damn deer around without using a cart. What the hell was I thinking? I have no idea.
Yeah.
So yeah, my Hawk crawler deer cart goes with me everywhere. The only thing I wish is that they put like solid tires on it, because I got a flat tire.
Okay.
That won't hold air. So I got to figure out a way to repair that thing. So I love my friggin' deer cart. Yeah, I already talked about my climbing sticks, dude. I love those freaking things. How about just stealth strips? Are you a stealth strips guy?
No, I use dirt cheap hockey tape.
Dude, you suck. Stealth strips is the greatest shit that's ever been made. I think I saw Dan Infault do like a little, I don't know if it was a video or just like a meme that they made, and he like stole the Frank's Red Hot thing. Like, I put that shit on everything. And dude, that's how I feel about stealth strips. I have stealth strip like everything I own. The stuff lasts freaking forever. I don't know what sort of adhesive they're using on it, but that shit lasts forever. It doesn't wear out, doesn't fade, doesn't come off. It's super quiet. Like, I love it, dude. I brought a couple rolls with me down in Kentucky, and a couple guys I went with, like during the day, we were literally like, had all of our gear laid out. We were like putting stealth strips on everything that we could.
Yeah.
Not that it helped us kill any deer that particular trip, but that stuff, that's another product that I just absolutely love.
Awesome.
So awesome. There you go. Those are my shout outs.
Funny, really quick, funny story about deer carts. So one night I'm going to help Todd Prignitz, go drag a deer out of the woods. And I'm just like, hey dude, there's a deer cart right here. Let's just put it in your truck and it's going to make the drag out easier. He's like, no way, dude. No way, dude. This is going to look better for on camera. And I was just like, of him like pulling this by himself out of this ditch. Meanwhile, there's like three other dudes behind the camera just waiting like, let us help you, man.
That's like my favorite thing when I see like a stock image somewhere that somebody took of like somebody dragging a deer by themselves. And they're like, they got the one arm, they got the deer. And it's like, you made it about three steps, asshole, before you had to stop. And you're like, oh my God, somebody help me get the deer cart, cut this thing into pieces. But like, why? Like, I know it looks cool for the photo, but yeah, I'm all about the deer cart, man.
Yeah. Meanwhile, behind the cameraman is like four people in a truck that's already running. So.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, I tell you what, man, good luck the rest of your season, man, and thanks for taking time to hop on.
Anytime.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.